Share something with the church that happened to me this week. Had a customer come in. He's getting around a little slow. He said, "Mr. Jimmy," he said, "they almost had me down in the cold storage room." And he said, "Lord brought me back." And I helped him out to his car. And he's telling me about how good the Lord been to him. But he looked at me, and this man walks around with the biggest wad of money in his pocket. He looked at me and said, "Mr. Jimmy, years ago, I got something on the banks of a river down in Pulaski, Tennessee. It's the most precious thing to me." And he says, "That's all I've got that's worth anything." We had a pretty good time there in the parking lot. As I've heard Brother Bert say, and many ministers here, sort of bear witness with those people. I had a real slow day in sales that day, but it was worth going to work that day for that man's testimony to me. Out of everything that he had, he'd been pretty successful. The most precious thing to him was what he got on the riverbank in Pulaski, Tennessee. And that meant a lot. I just want to share that with you. I gave him one of the Salvation Experience cards. I said, "Take this home. You got a computer?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Look it up and see if there's any down there, you know." He called me back before I went home. He says, "Man, I'm glad you gave me that." So, it was a good day. It's our devotional comes from Acts in chapter 7, verses 30 through 35. When 40 years were expired, they appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai, an angel of the Lord, and as a flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he wondered at the sight. And as he drew near to behold it, the voice of the Lord came unto him. Saying, "I am the God of thy fathers, and the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Then Moses trembled and durst not behold. Then said the Lord to him, "Put off thy shoes from thy feet, for the place where thou standest is holy ground. I have seen the affliction of my people which is in Egypt, and I have heard their groaning, and I have come to deliver them. And now come, I will send thee into Egypt." This Moses whom they refused, saying, "Who made thee a ruler of a judge? The same did God send to be a ruler and a deliverer by the hand of the angel which appeared to him in the bush." Are there any announcements before we go to class? If not, let's go to Sunday school.
Carrying on today with part two of our lesson entitled "God Calls Moses." And our lesson text is from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush was burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here am I." And he said, "Draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover," he said, "I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land into a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is coming to me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. For when thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. Now, you're aware that Moses is out and he's tending the flock here in this field. And, if you stop and think about it, that's going to be pretty kind of peaceful, I would suppose. Not a lot going on. Maybe a little boring at times. Just kind of watching over the flock, making sure everything's okay. And Moses sees this bush burning, and for him to gather that it's not being burned up, he's going to have to stand there and watch it for a little while. I mean, you look over there and you see something burning. It's not immediately apparent that it's not being consumed. So he sees this for a while, and it's not getting burned up. And so he's thinking, well, I want to get a little closer to this, see what's going on. Something's happening here. And so it's initially, the point that I'm getting is, he's not really praying. He's not really drawn near to God here. Now, I do think that he is near God in the life that he's living, but this doesn't start off as something spiritual. He's just kind of curious here. Well, what's going on with that bush? And so he starts to get closer to it. Well, as he draws near to it, closer to it, God talks to him. God reaches down. And the reason I said a few minutes ago was that I think that Moses, in his life in general, during this time, is near to God, is because God does speak to him. God does reach out there and say, all right, Moses, hold on. Take your shoes off. You're coming upon holy ground here. So now Moses is in a spiritual state, that he's able to hear this, that he's able to know that he is being spoken to by God. He recognizes that this God that is speaking to him is much more righteous, much more pure, much at a higher plane than he himself can ever be. The reason that I'm bringing all this up is because I'm wanting to point out the transformation that's taking place in Moses from the time that he fled Egypt. I want you to remember how that the state that he was in when he was a young man, 40 years before, he was brash and impatient. And I know we've covered all that again, but our the character, the type of person that we're seeing here is a more humble, patient man. A man that's kind of taking things a little bit slow and making sure about what he's doing. And a man that understands that he himself is not all that he had once thought he was. He understands his limits more so than he once did. And also, I believe he has gotten a better understanding of God, a better understanding of God's greatness, His power, his majesty, his holiness and righteousness. And I believe he recognizes that himself as a man can never come anywhere near that, and that he is limited by his own humanity. So God, he tells Moses to stop and to take his shoes off, that he's approaching holy ground. And then God goes on and he begins to tell him what's going to happen and the reason for this conversation that's taking place. And God has looked down and he's seen the affliction of his people in Egypt. And he's seen what's going on there. Now, Moses has been in this, he's been gone for 40 years. So now he had seen the affliction 40 years ago. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, did that kind of go to the back part of his mind? Because us as people, if we don't see something every day, it kind of, you know, it kind of moves back to the back. Now, you can stop and you can remember things from when you were younger, maybe when you were a kid, and you can remember how things were, and you can bring that back to the forefront of your mind. But it's not something that's on your mind all the time. And I'm sure Moses was the same way. Moses knew about the affliction that the children of Israel had been under, but I think that had kind of faded back. But God's bringing it back to him now. And I think God's also bringing back to him the sense of something that he has to do, something that I think Moses knew a long time ago. There was something that Moses had to do, and God's starting to bring all that back to the forefront of his mind. And you know, it says here God has said that he's seen the affliction of his children. Let's stop and think just a moment. God changes not. And those of us today that are saved are God's children. God looks down upon us and he sees what's going on. He knows what's happening in our lives, the troubles and the turmoils we have and the trials, tribulations, and the temptations that we face. He sees all those things. And we know that we can turn to him. All of us that's been saved, and from the testimonies that I've heard, everyone here is saved. We have turned to God at least once in our life, and probably all of us several times, many times in our lives, and he has heard those prayers. And we know when God answers our prayers. We know that it might not be something concrete that we can say, or it might be, but God lets us know when he hears our prayers. And we know that he looks down and he sees what's going on. But anyway, going back to our lesson here, God has seen this people, the tribulation that's gone on. He's heard their cries that they've cried up unto him. And he's answering their prayers here. And he's doing that through Moses. Now, it says here that in the 11th verse, and Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh?" I don't think that Moses is questioning God's judgment. I don't think he's really saying, "No, God, you're making a mistake." Now, he might be, and that might be something I would do. But really, I think that Moses has reached a point of humility, of humbleness, and he's saying, "There's nothing here. I can't do it because I'm nothing." Not necessarily, as I said, questioning God, but understanding that he, as a man, can't do this task. And God answers him and says, "Certainly I will be with thee." And that's what Moses needed. That's what Moses needed to know. And I believe that Moses took that and understood that. Now, Moses did carry on a little bit further there. He that wasn't the end of the situation, and I don't want to go too much further into that. But, you know, when I first studied this and when I first read this years ago, I always kind of had the impression that Moses was questioning God. And, you know, I can't say for sure that he wasn't, but I really think that this question, "Who am I?" was really more a statement of, "God, I'm nothing. I'm not a worthy servant to thee to go out and accomplish this. I'm not someone that can," and later on he'll give some reasons why. But the point is, Moses was a humble individual at this point in his life that he hadn't been so much in the past. And I think God saw that. I think God, that was part of the reasoning for the timing of these events, that when Moses was a younger person, he wasn't someone that God could use. He was brash, he was impatient, he was headstrong. And at this point today, he's a humble and submissive unto God. And because of that, and probably because of some other things, but I do think that this all has played into the timeline that God had. So how does that really apply to us today? Well, it applies to us because God needs the same type of people. He doesn't need brash, headstrong, impatient people that are just going to strike out upon their own. He needs humble and submissive people that will draw near to Him. And he has said in Psalms, the 9th division, the 11th verse of Psalms, it says, "Sing praises to the Lord which dwelleth in Zion. Declare among the people His doings. When He maketh inquisition for blood, He remembereth them. He forgetteth not the cry of the humble." God hears the cry of the humble. He hears the cry of the broken spirit and the contrite heart. Whether that be a lost person or a saved person, we today, as God's children, that's the way we have to come to Him. And I've said this before. I stand up here, and Bert stands up here, and we teach to y'all, and y'all come every Sunday, and it's something along the lines of preaching to the choir, I guess, because I don't really think that y'all are necessarily the ones that need to hear this, but hopefully you can hear it and maybe take it to those that, and I mean, I don't know your hearts or what's going on in your life. Maybe you do need to hear it. I don't know, but I sometimes think that this is something that we all can take to those, not just necessarily here in this building today at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, but maybe it's something that can come onto our heart, into our hearts, and into our minds later on during the week, that it'll help us out there to remember these things and to think about the way that God has acted here in the time frame that God has had, and the type of people that He needs and the type of people that He uses. We study in the Bible and we see how the children of Israel behaved, that we see the ups and downs that they had, and when God blessed them and they started getting things, they started being a wealthy people, they pretty much always, it seems like, drifted away from God. They got lifted up with pride, and that's what had happened in Isaiah in the 57th verse. It said, in the 13th verse, it says, "When thou criest, let thy companies deliver thee." That is, the people that you've trusted in, the people that you've turned to, how you've let your hearts go away. He says, go ahead, let those things deliver thee now. And then he said, "But the wind shall carry them all away, vanity shall take them, but he that putteth his trust in me shall possess the land, and it shall inherit my holy mountain, and shall say, cast ye up, prepare the way, take up the stumbling block out of the way of the people. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." That is, that's the type of people that he's going to be with, the type of people that he's going to use, and the type of people that get their prayer through unto him. And as I stand here and I talk about this Jewish people and how their hearts are lifted up, I want to stop for a second and say that I don't necessarily, today when I think of somebody that's proud and lifted up with pride, I kind of think of I have a certain person in personality type in my mind of somebody that's all puffed up and they're doing things and they're all, I'm so good at this and I can do that so well. And that is a pride, and I think that's, that type of attitude is wrong, whether it's from God's people or from a lost person. But also, there's a type of pride that doesn't really come to mind sometimes, and that's this type that these people have taken up with the things of the world and gotten all enmeshed in them, and they're content to go along with those things and to just become mixed in. And when they do that, they don't view God as being lofty, as being righteous and holy. As Moses saw God here, when God said, take your shoes off because the ground that you're approaching on is holy ground. It was holy ground because God was there. And Moses sensed the distance that there was between him as a man that was living probably a good life, wasn't really out there sinning in the sense that we would think of sins, but he was probably a good man. He helped out other people. He lived his life as best he could. But he's here, and he knew this. He understood this. And God is way up here. And that's the attitude that we as God's people have to have. There has to be someone between us down here and God up there, and that person is Jesus Christ. Now, these people that in Isaiah, where he said, let the companies deliver thee, I think that they maybe not weren't out there doing, well, they were doing some pretty evil things in the time of Isaiah. But one of the big problems that they had were they weren't no longer seeing this distance, how the holiness of God being, God's holiness and righteousness being way above their own, but were rather more like, yeah, okay, God's, he's righteous. He doesn't do anything wrong. Well, we do pretty good, though. You know, I haven't killed anybody. I haven't lied in the last 30 minutes. You know, I haven't been drunk. So, you know, I'm doing pretty good. God's up here, but I'm pretty high up too. And that's a dangerous way to be, because that's pride right there. You know, it's not the pride that I talked about earlier of being all lifted up about what all great things I can do, but it's pride nonetheless, because it's not humbleness. It's not humility. Well, I had a thought and it went away. It was going to be a good one too. Going to drive it all home here. All right. Maybe it'll come back before this is over with. But
it's you have those things on.
Yeah. It will. I need a pencil so I can just immediately write it down. But you know, I think that Moses would have been in that category of the one that didn't really appreciate the distance between himself, and when I say distance, I mean the distance of righteousness and morality, of his righteousness and morality versus God's when he was a young man. But at this point, he's gotten to where he can see that, and he can appreciate that. Now, I've kind of a little bit maybe given you the impression that God is unreachable. And he is unreachable without the shed blood of Jesus Christ. And God, Jesus is our mediator between a holy and righteous God and our own sinful selves. And that's where we need to keep that in mind, to remember that, because the Bible teaches us that that Jesus was a man and he was tempted as we are. He endured all these things. So he can understand, he can know what it is that we're going through. And yet, he is still holy and righteous, and he is up there where God is in righteousness and holiness, and he deserves to be up there. It's not it wasn't something that was just given to him for no reason. He has every right to be on the same plane as God because he was sinless. The point there is that Jesus is the one that we can turn to, and the reason we can turn to him and pray is because he has walked this earth. He has gone through these things, these trials and temptations, and he has gone through them without sinning, without failing God, without doing anything wrong. I can't say that, and neither can you, because we are imperfect beings, and we have been lifted up with pride in the times past. Whether it was the pride of being thinking we're all that and we're something and we can really do something, or whether it's just the pride of being, I'm not all that bad of a person. God's great and he's holy, but, you know, it's only a little bit of distance between us. That's just not the case. There is a great distance between God's righteousness and our righteousness. And that's what we as God's people need to keep that in mind, because I'm afraid we do tend to kind of bring God down to our level sometimes, to think of Him as just a very good person, for lack of a better word. Now, you know, Moses turned to see this burning bush. He wanted to see what was going on. It was something different. And when God called out to him, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here am I," he recognized that there was a righteous God calling to him. In times past, when he was a younger man with that pride that I'm speaking about, I have to wonder if he wouldn't have turned aside and said, "Oh, hey, did you come over here to see this burning bush also? You thought that was cool too." The point being there that he understood his position. He understood God's position. And in times past, he might not have. He probably wouldn't have. He would have probably looked at God as being, I guess, a little God, for lack of a better word. Not a God of the heathens, not the Dagon and Chemosh and those others, but a God that was not so great in his mind, not so great in his heart, not the God that he has felt. And I don't know if I'm really getting the point across there, but the point that I want to get across is God's greatness, the sovereign power of God, the God, a God that can create the universe. That's a big God right there. That's a God that deserves respect, that deserves reverence, that deserves for us as his people. And it says Moses turned his head. He didn't want to look on it. That's the way we ought to be. We ought to be fearful of this God, not fearful because he's going to destroy us without reason, but fearful because he has laid out things for us to do. He has laid out ways for us to behave, and he has laid out punishments and chastisements that will come to pass if we don't obey him. You know, he's a merciful and loving God, but he's also a just and righteous God. Moses knew that. He sensed that when God was talking to him. He sensed that, you know, "I'd better listen. I'd better do what he said. I'd better take my shoes off and understand that this is holy ground. This is something serious. This isn't something to just, you know, throw my arm up and say, 'Hey, hey, hey, come on over, buddy.' That's not the God. That's not the way to approach God in an irreverent manner." So, and Moses didn't do that. He humbled himself. He was already humble, but he recognized the need to bow down and to submit unto God. One more thing here, and I'll be done. I wanted to show forth God as being righteous and in the state that he is in, so much above us. But it's comforting to know in Hebrews 13:5, he said, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he hath said, 'I will never leave thee nor forsake thee.'" This God that is so powerful and so almighty and so all-knowing has said that he won't leave us. He won't forsake us. He will be there for us. So that's a great God. And that's the God that Moses worshipped. That's the God that Abraham worshipped. And that's the same God that we worship today. He has not changed any at all. Would there be any thoughts or any comments on the
exactly answer? Exactly. You said something that really made me start thinking about myself. You said you didn't think Moses was actually questioning God. So I got to thinking about myself, and I think, and I think you do. And maybe that's something I'm going to have to work on. Because when the Lord impresses me to do something, the first thing I do is say, stopped. Nothing else would come. So I got all this written down, and I let Bart read it, and he said, yeah, that sounds good. So I thought, well, I think I'm going to do a good job. And we got there, and I stood up there. That was a bad moment. But I had everything written, so I knew I could do it. I didn't necessarily want to read it verbatim as I was reading a book to someone, so I was just going to follow my little notes. Well, the Lord's had a different idea. Because when I looked down at those notes, it looked like Japanese writing. I couldn't read them. I couldn't find where I was. Nothing. I could not use those notes. They were kind of in my head what the Lord wanted me to say. And that's what I did. So I was really depending on myself and not dependent on the Lord to just take me and use me for what you want me to do, although I don't think I'm going to be very good, but that's what you want me to do, I'll do. So I'm thinking maybe I need to put down the Lord and stuff. And just, if he wants me to do something, I'll say, well, you just help me.
I can agree with what you said. I can't say that I could do, I mean, I'm in the same position as what you're saying now. Not necessarily that I'd say, no, you're wrong, but I don't know now. I mean, you're talking about standing up in front of people. It's okay to stand up in front of people I know a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
40 minutes a week, every other week is okay. You know, we can work with that, but. Lord makes a way. I mean, you said that someone talked to you and wrote the notes down. Told you what to do. Well, you know, maybe God sent that person. Maybe that was his way of preparing you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Because I simply didn't know what to do. And she said you need to write down some notes right now. Maybe that is a good idea. So that's what I started doing. But the Lord didn't mean you go to stand up there and read them.
Right.
He just put the thoughts in my head. So that's why he turned to Japanese when I looked at it.
Well, I mean, I stand up here, I have my notes written out. And then you're looking at them and saying, well, what did I mean by that? Why did I write that there? So, it's not just you.
And then you got the devil saying, boy, you sure didn't make a mess there.
Yeah.
You got to deal with that.
There is that. And sometimes he's not wrong. Was there anything else before we dismissed?
I just think that God of heaven sent us a good example of Christ. He's in a perfect life. I mean, none of us even come close to what he's done. But he's an example for us to try.
That's true. If there's nothing else, let's keep the preacher in our prayers. The Lord be with him today, that the Lord would meet with us today. Sonny, would you dismiss us?